Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Smart to Death podcast. I am not here with Kyle today. I am here to review Tables, Lounge, and Chairs with the one and only Mr. Warren Hayes. Warren, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing fantastic. I'm still kind of after that main event that we just had. I'm still sponging myself off, to be perfectly honest. But I'm good.
I don't know how I feel about you saying sponging myself off.
Well, you know how you feel.
You're
just not completely honest with yourself.
That might be true. So anyway, guys, yeah, so if you are joining us there in Twitch, there is JPQ joining us in the chat. What is up, John? John joined us on Kyle and I on Friday and joined us for Final Battle, but we are on something completely different today. So, yeah, let's kind of get into it. Before we get going, if you guys don't know Mr. Warren Hayes, I want to give him a chance to kind of tell you what you do on your show and what you have coming up this week. And, you know, if you want to plug Fightful Select, you go ahead and do that too, bud.
All right. Well, I have I do Raw and SmackDown recaps over on YouTube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes. You can see the address right there on the Warren board. No, it's not a whiteboard. It's a Warren board. Mother always said branding is important. So I do that every Monday and Tuesday live. And then after that, I do a lot. I cover a lot of the secondary NXT, WWE brands, including NXT, 205 Live, NXT UK, for Fightful Select, which is the premium service for Fightful.com. So you basically get a ton of extra wrestling podcasts that are exclusive for members only, a whole bunch of stuff. If you want to check that out, go right ahead. It's FightfulSelect.com. You get some great content starting at just $5 a month. And then if you want more of me without necessarily having to pay for it, well, you just head over to my YouTube channel, YouTube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes. Yeah, as we're heading into the holidays after this, it's pretty quiet on that front, except we've got something going on tomorrow night as well, Anthony.
We do, yeah. So Warren and I will be joining Kristen Ashley from Diva Dirt and helping her host the Diva Dirt Year-End Fan Awards, so that'll be fun.
It will be.
I'm looking forward to that. So, you guys, I'm usually with Kyle, but I said off-stream earlier to somebody, I think it was to John, actually, that this is like hanging out with older Canadian Kyle tonight, because you say some weird shit on your stream, man. I'm there every Monday, and it is something else. But before we get into the card, I want to take a moment and give you guys this Power Slam ad up here in the corner. PowerSlam.tv, if you are really hyped from watching wrestling, I want you to go check this out, because it's awesome. So PowerSlam TV has like 3,000 hours of content, and if you go there on the web browser and use the code SMART to death, you will actually get 30 days for free. So you can watch CZW if you want to watch more people going through tables. So
and other things that cut.
And other things that cut, like, you know, light bulbs and the like. So, yeah, let's get on to TLC. So we started off with a fucking long show.
Oh, my God. 12 matches. 12 matches, and this wasn't even it's not even a premiere. It's like not one of the big five. Like, you know, when it comes to like the SummerSlams and the Survivor Series and, you know, and WrestleMania, you're like, okay, well, I'm getting ready. It's one of the big shows of the year. But this was, it's TLC. Uh-huh. Like, technically, at this time last year, it's Clash of the Champions.
Oh, was that what it was this time last year?
Yes, yes.
When was TLC last year?
Wasn't it like, what's it? It was just in, it was instead of Hell in a Cell. Mm-hmm. It was right after SummerSlam, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, dear God. You're right, though. Like, what was this, a 7-hour show or a 5-hour show?
Yeah, if you count the pre-show. We were talking about this off stream earlier today when we were setting things up. We were saying, oh, well, we kind of expect this show to not finish really. It won't be a long show. We'll be done in a jiffy.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like 11 o'clock. Pre-show started at 6 p.m. Eastern. I'm talking on Eastern Standard. 6 p.m. That's 5 hours of WWE, man.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah, and Kyle is actually over in the chat. Is not with me here in person. He was hanging out with the wife celebrating love today. But Kyle said we actually had 2 pay-per-views a month last year. So I guess that's why it seems like it was so far away. Maybe it was the same month. I I don't remember what brand it was though.
It was probably a Raw brand, but it's odd because then when you think about it, like just Survivor Series, there were 8 matches on the card,
mm-hmm.
and it felt great.
Yeah.
Like it was just like, wow, this is all the matches. It was a really good pay-per-view. Yeah. The pacing was perfect. And it was, when it was done, it was like, cool. Bring me more. Give me more. I'm okay with this. But man, and then it's the psychological part of it. We just go through 5 hours of stuff. Then we've got 3 hours of Raw tomorrow. We've got 2 hours of Raw on SmackDown. You're like, oh my God. You know, it's just.
Yeah. it's a whole lot, but we got to break it down. So let's go into the first match. We had Cruiserweight Championship match. It was Buddy Murphy as the current champion against Cedric Alexander in what was a really good match. It was technically very good. It wasn't quite as good as the Super Showdown matchup by any means.
No.
But it was good enough. It was too good to be on the pre-show. I think that's the first talking point there, is that this match shouldn't have been on the pre-show.
No, it should not. I have 2 other candidates that could have taken that place, taken the Cruiserweight title place. It's an odd decision for them to make, them being WWE, to have put their Cruiserweights back on the pre-show, mm-hmm. because it's been 2 consecutive pay-per-views that they've been up on the main card. Especially since I feel like since Buddy Murphy has taken the title, there's been a bit more of a more awareness that has been created about the brand. His match with Mustafa Ali at Survivor Series was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's as much like it's not a doom and gloom situation. 205 Live is going as well as a brand that has been entirely built on word of mouth can go.
Right.
But I do feel it's a bit of a step down. I also would have given this match 2 to 3 minutes more.
I agree with that. Yeah, I agree with that completely.
And I really think it would have served the match so much more.
Yeah, that's underscore NIC3, I'm guessing that's Nick3, said that the Mix Max Challenge match and the Cruiserweight 100% should have swapped. And that is so very true. Because
I think go ahead.
No, I just don't understand why this weird tournament that I don't know who really turns into it. Like, why is that match getting main, uninterrupted, no commercials? Like, why the...
The commercials. Why are you putting commercials for your pay-per-view on the pay-per-view?
It's the dumbest thing.
What is this? This is awful Inception. It's not even like good Inception. It's like reverse Inception. It's so dumb. But the only reason that I can think of them putting the Mixed Match Challenge finals on the main card is because it has main card. It had main card stakes.
Right.
It had the Royal Rumble stakes. That's the only reason why I figured they'd want to go put it up there. Because otherwise, there was no reason for the finals to be to be in any other position than on the pre-show. I want to point out how Cedric Alexander drove this match. His sense of urgency,
yes,
that he had, like as if he felt like this was like his. Possibly his last opportunity in a long, long time to regain his title. The urgency, the emergency with which he was going forward in the match, it gave it so much gas.
Mm-hmm.
And they continue to establish. But I'm an avid 205 Live listener, by the way.
Right.
They continue to establish Buddy Murphy as the guy you absolutely have to chase. You know,
mm-hmm.
like he just. He's the imposing force. He is the top champ. You come for me, I'll be here waiting, and I will beat your ass. You know,
yeah.
That was fantastic.
Yeah, I'm with you. And it's crazy because there's so much to say about this match, but not so much about the next one. But yeah, Cedric Alexander did absolutely. Yeah, there was a sense of urgency. I agree with that completely. And that told the story. There was a lot of really good storytelling in this match, and Buddy Murphy was just better.
And again, Buddy Murphy getting out of the lumbar check, he didn't kick out of it like he did in Australia,
mm-hmm.
but he still got out of it. And the lumbar check is one of the most protective finishers in WWE, not just 205 Live, in the entire company.
Mm-hmm.
That means something. Like, right. you know, like right now the question is, who is going to take down Buddy Murphy?
Right.
There are not many candidates right now who can do it.
No. And one guy you think could, looks like he may or may not be on main roster now, with Mustafa Ali. So it'll be interesting to see what goes on from there. But we have to move on to whatever this was supposed to be, which was the ladder match between Elias and Bobby Lashley in a guitar on a pole match.
Well, it's suspended, but I think it's more apropos.
It's on a pole.
To say that it's on a pole.
Fucking yes, Russo booked this match. Russo was there. We're back to WCW, as my buddies over the Irish Whip Mafia would say. Whatever. I have nothing to fucking say about this match.
I didn't take any notes.
No, I did. There was nothing to take. It was weird. So I had Elias winning this match. I had Elias smashing Leo Rush with the guitar, and of course that didn't happen. When Elias got the guitar, comes back down, Bobby Lashley hits him in the back with it after Leo Rush does his weird frog splash, and this feud's not going to fucking stop, I guess.
Apparently not. You're like me, right? You didn't understand that the stipulation was to win the match, you have to remove the guitar, right?
I did not know that until Wednesday.
And, oh, you knew this beforehand?
I knew this when Kyle told me about it when we were predicting the other day. That is literally when I found out in the intro of our show Wednesday.
No. Also, you knew that the winner of the match had to
Yes, I did know that you had to, like a title belt, pull the guitar down. I did know that going into it, and I still was shocked to see it.
Because there were a lot of people on Twitter who were confused at the same time, and that sort of reassured me, because it seemed to me that it was just up there as a weapon and whoever got it could use it. Like, I had never understood that whoever unhooked the guitar would win.
Yeah. Yep. That was the whole point of this, as if it was a TL. Yeah. It's stupid. Kristen said that she knew it. Kristen Ashley is actually in here. This is the first one of my streams she's made it to.
Okay. Well, of course she'll come over here and she'll say she knew.
Before we move on, Kyle did point out that Kushida, if he does end up being, you know, the rumors are that WWE's interested. He would be a nice person to challenge for the 205 Live Cruiserweight Championship
belt. And he'd be very much deserving. One of the greatest juniors in history. Yeah. Why not? Yeah. Give it to him.
So let's move on to the Mixed Match Challenge Tournament Finals, which was Ma Alicia, Jinder Mahal, and Alicia Fox versus the Fabulous Truth, R-Truth, and Carmella. And damn it, I love R-Truth and Carmella. I love it so much.
They're a great act. They're a fantastic, fantastic act together. Absolutely.
They are. And we've talked a lot, and you and I were talking about it in our group chat with Kristen as well, and Kyle and I talk about this all the time. I've been pretty high on Carmella since she was called up. I thought she was a great heel. I think she works even better as a face. I think she, in a weird way, I didn't expect her to work so well as a face, but she's phenomenal. The dance break thing is fun. She got R-Truth back on TV, which, you know, say whatever you want about R-Truth. He's great. He deserves to be on TV. I think he's hilarious. And they're both not bad wrestlers either.
And their gimmick is R-Truth's gimmick is fantastic. You mm-hmm. know, semi-confused. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes is he really confused or is he just acting confused, right. You know? Carmella, see, the thing is, The entire time she was SmackDown Women's Champion, they booked her as this cowardly, cowardly heel, mm-hmm. acting, a little punching above her weight kind of thing, you know, like she was under everyone and that she didn't really deserve it and that she got it only through nefarious chicanery, you know? Mm-hmm. And then she ends up losing the title at SummerSlam. She looked really good mm-hmm. in that three-way match, mm-hmm. by the way. She gets her contractually obligated rematch on the following Tuesday. And she looks amazing. She had her best match of the year against Charlotte right there, to the point where I'm like, give us some more. Give us more of this Carmella. And why wasn't this Carmella, the Carmella we got during her title defense, during her title reign, I should say, that would have calmed the haters down so much. It was crazy. And just the fact that she started breaking out the code of silence
mm-hmm.
again, like she won with the code of silence tonight, I'm like, I mean, there's still so much upside to this woman that we haven't seen yet.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that too. That's underscore Nick3 says R-Truth is coming out at number 30 in the Women's Royal Rumble. He says it's a hot take. It was also predicted by me on my own podcast on Wednesday because that's going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's absolutely happening. It's going to be great. But yeah, I'm with you. Carmella has become a very good wrestler. She looked really great in that title defense when she lost. And I agree with every one of those points. She's in the right place too, right? Like, you still believe that at any point they could heat her up and she could win the title. Like,
absolutely. And if they give her time and they give her, it's basically a question of creative giving her the lead, you know, the opportunity, the leeway to say, yeah, go out there and wrestle and perform. She can do it. She will be able to do it. And that was one of the problems that existed throughout her tenure as SmackDown Live Women's Champion. They just didn't give her the room to wrestle.
Right, right. No, 100%. But so R-Truth and Carmella, the Fabulous Truth, did win. I feel like that was an easy prediction. I feel like that you probably should have been able to guess. Of course, Jinder Mahal, if you're paired up with Alicia Fox, frankly, you're just not going to win.
you could say the same thing about Jinder these days too, yeah. You know.
You could.
Wait, sir. Former WWE champion Jinder Mahal.
There it is. Moving on to championship matches. We have the SmackDown Tag Team Championship Triple Threat match, which was The Bar as champs versus The Usos versus The New Day. I was disappointed by this match. It was not bad. I was just disappointed by it.
Yeah, I think we're at a stage where, you know, where you see the Usos and you see the New Day together and you're like, oh, okay, you expect like this magic. Mm-hmm. And you throw in The Bar as well, who have meshed so well as a tag team. They've become an actual credible tag team, no longer just two single guys together. And off the heels of that fantastic singles match that they had on SmackDown this week, we're like, yeah, this has the potential to be something special. It wasn't bad, but I think maybe we had our expectations a little enhanced, perhaps you'd say.
I think that's fair. And you're right, though. Like, all three of, no matter what iteration of these three people or these three teams in a match together, it's typically very, very good. It's typically some really good stuff, some really good work on the screen. All of these wrestlers are incredibly talented, but I can't even really recall anything from that match thinking about it right now. There's nothing in there that I can really think of. I know Sheamus looked good. That's about it. That's all I have.
Well, the super kick party by the Usos, which was really cool. The pop-up Samoan drop that Jay and Jimmy did on Woods, I want to say.
It was on Woods. Now I recall these things.
And I mean, you know, it's low key stuff. Like, I always find that Xavier Woods doesn't get the time of day that Big E and Kofi get, because he does such low key stuff that. But like his top rope walk elbow onto Sheamus,
that he
Sheamus
nails was like every time,
and he was fucking on the other side of the ring too.
Yeah.
I mean, that, you know, at this point we're sort of like, oh, elbow drops, but I mean it's. He still flew across the ring and nailed it perfectly.
Yeah.
Those were my standout moments of the match.
Yeah. And looking back, I can think of that. And Deej Kirkby, Darren, we all know Darren in the wrestling podcast community out here. But he says that the SmackDown tag scene needs a refresh so bad. And he is very right.
Well, here's what I thought, Darren, and what's your name again, Anthony?
Yeah.
I had predicted the Usos coming out on top here because that it would have been just natural then to just slide Sanity into a position of challengers, right?
Right.
And just give something, first of all, for Sanity to do, and give the fans some new matches that we haven't seen before, because Sanity and the Usos, for real, are you kidding me? Like Killian Dane, the giant who thinks he's a cruiserweight,
right?
Put him with the Usos anytime. It's going to get ridiculous. I mean, that's something I'd look forward to.
Yeah, I actually think that it works better that The Bar retained for the same reason, though. Like, in my mind, I see Sanity versus The Bar as a more practical match to get into. Regardless, I talked about this in the Discord with old JPQ. I'm sure he's still hanging out in Twitch over here. The one thing that's bad about WWE, like I enjoy a lot of WWE, I do, except Monday Night Raw has been rough, but tomorrow will tell us if it's going to be any better, I guess. But the one thing I hate the most about it is the worst tag team wrestling in all of the major promotions is in WWE, is in main roster WWE. It's the worst. Sure. They don't treat the tag teams well. It's stagnant. The same people are always champs, and when they do switch people up, the people that win that they're trying to push immediately lose, like AOP. AOP or whoever, the Glorious Gable or whatever the fuck their names are. They weren't even on the card tonight. So it's like there's only room for one tag match, and then it wasn't even that great of a tag match. So it's a bummer. I'm a big tag team wrestling mark, as I have my Young Bucks pops behind me and Young Bucks posters fucking everywhere. It's my thing.
No, but I agree. You hear the stories, right? It's that Vince McMahon doesn't like tag team wrestling. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't like tag teams. That's the story you keep hearing. But, I mean, there is so much upside to having a proper tag team division, it's just such a nice break from the singles competition. It's another way to approach wrestling. It's another dimension completely. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, otherwise they wouldn't have done it in the territory days. You know what I mean? If it had been, if it was just throwaway shit, they would have never thrown money at it.
Right.
And you can, you know, easily argue that the Rock and Roll Express were top money draws back then.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, Metal 2006 says the club versus anyone done right would be instant gold. And Darren says that at least it's better than the Revival for as champs, which is true. Fuck the Revival.
Wait, no.
I got to bring it on here. Shout out to Spies. If he ever comes back and listens to this, I'm going to get a nasty DM, I'm hoping. So I had a nice little spot when I was on their show. I don't know if you watched the other day, but I immediately started off by asking him if the Revival was on this show.
Yep.
Yeah.
You drew some battle lines right off the bat there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And
by the way, for the record, I did not endorse that fuck the Revival statement. I disassociate myself from this show.
For the record, for the Revival, says JPQ. Mm-hmm. Moving on to the next match. And I'm actually really curious what you think about it, because I feel like we sometimes have very, very different opinions on these types of matches. The TLC match, Baron Corbin versus, holy shit, he showed up, Braun Strowman. So tell me your thoughts on everything that happened with this match, which was a fucking lot.
Was this a match?
I mean, someone got pinned.
Let's call this an angle and I'll be okay with it.
Like a Kurt Angle, maybe?
I don't know how to feel about it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because my two main feelings that I have about it are very, very contradictory. On one hand, I find that the angle was really, really well executed in a very old school 1990s kind of way, where the big villain comes out and the hero comes out, but the hero is not alone. He brings everyone that the villain has slighted. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, and the villain turns out he's alone. His cronies aren't coming out to save him for some reason. And then you have, you know, the good guys who come and pummel him down and they stand tall. You know, the big bad guy gets his comeuppance.
Yep.
Right? Which is so important in wrestling.
And was
which
the
is
theme
something,
of this show, really.
Was yes, it was. Yes. Yes. You know, something that, you know, we've always argued that Stephanie McMahon will never be able to properly get, right? Mm-hmm. She'll never be able to properly get her comeuppance. Well, Baron Corbin ate all her comeuppance and the companies, so on and so forth. But then on the other hand, this was one of two marquee TLC matches, advertised TLC matches, right?
Yeah.
You had the triple threat women's match, which we will talk about in a little while. Mm-hmm. But I mean, this, all the other matches were tables or chairs or no steps at all. This was one of the big TLC matches and there was just nothing. So, but I understand that, you know, Braun was at a point where he had to have the surgery.
Yeah.
He couldn't push it back any longer. It railroaded their plans. Perhaps they were holding out hope that he'd be ready, you know, to do something.
Sure.
Apparently not.
Well, it would have been a squash regardless.
It would have been a squash, but at least use some toys. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was so that's what bugs me on one end. Mm-hmm. It's because they at some point, then maybe they just should have, you know, you flip the script around and you're like, okay, never mind the TLC match for Corbin and Strowman. Let's give it to Dean and Seth, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's one of the attractions of the show.
Right.
You have one for the women, you have one for the guys.
Yeah. So I see your point with that. But I think this is that kind of random bullshit we found out the other day. Like, Vince McMahon is coming to save the day and make changes on Monday Night Raw tomorrow. So, like, this is the angle that plays into it, obviously, right? Like, obviously, this is what's going to happen. My issue is none of those things you said, though. My issue is I don't think we had Baron Corbin as the big bad long enough for this to really be that impactful of a moment.
I sincerely agree.
Baron Corbin has been fucking fantastic as GM. Not everybody agrees with it. We've got people in the chat saying GMP break. I disagree. I think he's been doing some of the best character work. We did get way too heel heavy, but at this point, people aren't watching this fucking show anyway. You might as well, or not true, 2 million, but people are starting to turn this show off anyway. Ride the story idea you had out for a little bit longer and let the heels take over and then build to this big moment where all of these faces being out there to beat up the big bad means a whole lot more.
Yes, I agree with that. And it's a nice caveat to my point about it being an old school angle.
Right.
You know, at this point, you would have just waited it out a little more. It would have been much more, if it had been waited out a little more, it would have been much more effective. Because when Apollo Crews came out, you make an excellent point. What's your name again, Anthony?
Yeah.
You make an excellent point. When Apollo Crews came out, Crews was like, Crews comes out and I'm like, wait, Braun is recruiting Apollo Crews right to help him out? Why, mm-hmm, though? And then it's like, then Roode and Gable come out and I'm like, okay. They're pissed off at Corbin because of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then Finn Balor comes out. Finn Balor has legit reasons. For months now. He had the most story. So it kind of felt tacked on to send out the slighted wrestlers, which weren't all that slighted either, you know? No, that's a very good point.
Yeah, so Metal 2006 in the chat says, we now have Baron P Break and Rockstar P Pants. What an era of WWE to watch.
Oh, poor Drake, poor Spud. I feel so. But then again, he's such a cool guy. I'm sure he's 100% okay with it.
Right.
Like, I'm sure to him, it's just like, oh, fuck it. It's just wrestling.
Yeah.
You know, that, you know.
That's pretty good, man.
No, thank you.
I don't know. I'm from fucking Texas. I don't know what accents sound like. Moving on. We had a tables match, and before we get started on this match, I have to preface it by saying I do not like tables matches, and they just do not do anything for me. But we had Natalya versus Ruby Riott in a controversial storyline, albeit a well-built storyline. Whether you agree with how it was done or not, it had storyline devices, and it followed it as best as they can do in WWE. Whatever. I don't know how you felt about this match, but for me, it's I got nothing.
I thought it did not live up to either of these ladies' capabilities, abilities, talents that they have. It was a bit of a snoozer, and that's too bad because I didn't find the storyline all that controversial. I thought it was, I think they were. Like, you know, what's the opposite of cheap heat? It's cheap baby faceness, you know, it's a cheap pop,
right?
You know, but going to get that sentimentality. But then, okay, I'm pretty sure that WWE, especially when you listen to, especially like the Bruce Pritchard show, you know, the he talks about when they talk about these very controversial, very touchy, very personal subjects, you never hear them talk about how, oh, you know, this was Vince who came and he put he put the hammer down. And he's like, no, we're doing this. Yeah, he'd ask, you know, look, we have this idea. Do you want to run with it? Do you think it's a good idea? So I'm pretty sure that Natalya is 100% behind this. She even said in an interview recently that this whole angle has been oddly therapeutic for her as well.
Huh.
So the angle in it about itself, especially with the way it was portrayed on Monday, it didn't bother me. Natalia's promo on Monday was so earnest and sentimental, mm-hmm. and felt very true. I mean, she got choked up legitimately. She dedicates the match to your dad. Spoiler alert, I'm winning on Sunday kind of thing, but that's fine. You know, it did hit you in the feels because it was very, very close to her. She wasn't acting. It was very true. Ruby Riott comes out. She's acting like a Batman supervillain.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like cartoon Batman supervillains. Right. Like,
I crushed your father's sunglasses. And now look what I have behind this drape. It's a table with your dad stuck on it.
You know, it was on one hand, it went from.
What the fuck has happened on this podcast?
Hey, you get all of this every Monday and Tuesday night on the Mr. Warren Hayes Show, youtube.com/ Mr. Warren Hayes.
Oh, smart to death listeners, I don't know what I've done to you. At Kyle Dillon's me, tell him never to leave me again, this motherfucker. My God. Go on.
My point being is that you had this very, very real angle, but then Ruby Riott comes out and she delivers a cartoony villain promo. Which brings us back to the fact that, okay, shit, I am watching pro wrestling. Let's not forget this. It brings it back down to the level of absurdity and ridiculousness that we're used to in this environment. Was it going too far? No, I don't think so, because whatever was too real or sincere about the angle that may have made us feel uncomfortable was completely wiped away when there was a full body sticker of Jim the Anvil Neidhart on a fucking table. There's no way you can take it all that seriously after that. You know what I mean?
No. I'm with you. I get doing a tables match and I get using this angle. And that's cool that Natty said it was therapeutic for her. I think that's fantastic. But like you said, Ruby Riott is better than being whatever impression of the Joker you just did was. She's so much better than being this like loony, weird fucking character. Like, you just don't need that. She's a great wrestler. I don't even think they needed a gimmick. I think just let these women have a wrestling match. We don't need, they're both very good. Ruby Riott is probably one of the most underutilized female talents in WWE. I think she's fantastic all around. Mike, skills,
I think
everything.
She can prop up the division like they're using Ember Moon right now. She can be used on the exact same level as Ember Moon, but on the heel side.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. Darren in the chat says that this angle didn't offend him. He just thought it seemed a little classless. So, it's WWE. I mean, Katie Vick. So, that was a whole thing.
But then when we always come back to the worst, like, is that really the bar when it's, you know, when we're like, oh, what are terrible, you know, it's not that terrible an angle, because let's not forget Katie Vick.
Right.
You know, it's like, here, have some macaroni and cheese. Your macaroni and cheese is terrible. Oh, well, it's either macaroni and cheese or this pile of shit.
Yeah.
You know,
you guys are probably getting a cameo appearance by my dogs barking at something outside. I have no idea what's going on. My wife let them out. I don't know. I don't know what's happening here. Moving on to the next match. Finn Balor.
Maybe it's Texan burglars.
Texan burglars. Those are called rats. Finn Balor versus Drew McIntyre was the next match. And I actually pretty accurately predicted this outcome, just saying. Knew that Finn would win. Knew it would be because of Dolph Ziggler's help. Because, of course it was. That was pretty forecasted on Monday. But anyway, I thought this match was really good. I thought Finn looked good. I thought Drew looked good. Finn was the first of the ex-Bullet Club leaders to get his chest marked up by some chops tonight, because damn did he get marked up.
Ooh.
Yeah, that he was painted red with some fucking chops. My God, they were good. But overall, really nice. Drew was protected immensely by the way he lost this match. You can immediately look at that Drew, and if they're like, hey, tomorrow he's in the main event, okay. Okay. And same with Finn. I mean, they do mostly protect Finn, I think.
Well, I mean, you know, there's a level of bulletproofness to Finn,
right?
Because of the way he conducts himself, the intangibles that he has as far as his charisma goes and the way he can connect with the audience.
Right.
So even if he does end up in a streak where he's losing matches, it's Finn Balor and it works. And I agree, Drew lost in the most Drew way, meaning that he's super protected. They're making sure they're building him up to something important.
Right.
I'm really curious to see what they're going to do with him leading on from here, because if the feud is switching from Finn Balor to Dolph, I mean, they could always make it a triple threat.
I think it'll be a triple threat, and I think this is a feud that we all deserve. I'm big on Dolph Ziggler. I've been big on Dolph Ziggler for a very long time. It's a little tough to be a Dolph Ziggler fan because so many people hate him,
And I don't understand why.
No, like, he's such a good wrestler.
Like hate, like outright hate.
Yeah,
I don't understand. Like, you know, maybe you can be. Maybe, oh, we're ready to move on to someone else.
Right.
Sure, fine. Oh, you know, I don't like his style. That's fine. But outright hate is really strange.
Right.
I mean, there is, let's say I'm a WWE wrestler and then Vince McMahon comes over to me and he says, pal, you're about to get the push. You're going to win at WrestleMania. But in the meantime, we got to make you look good. Well, I hope he's going to put me in a program with Dolph Ziggler because Dolph Ziggler is going to make me look like a Godzilla.
Right.
That's what he's going to make me look like.
And the other nice thing, and Kyle and I talked about this the other day, I want to say it was actually on this past week's show, that Dolph is unique to WWE in a way where he's the only person they have. They actually do have control of heating up and cooling off. Like, if they want him to be a hot act healer face, they're going to get it every time. If they want to cool him off, they'll cool him off. And he's the only guy that you know they can do that with. And you'll get the exact reaction they want from it. Yeah, I mean, you got to give this guy some respect. And his selling is ridiculous. But if he's going to feud with Finn, that's great for us Finn fans, because that means Finn's probably about to be in a very, very important angle where maybe he wins. Because typically, if you beat Dolph, you probably win your next angle.
Yep, I agree. I think there's something good that's going to come out of this. And this was a pretty good match too.
It was
like
a good match.
I think it was like the first match where I was like, okay, this was solid, good stuff.
Yeah. Moving on to the next match. Damn, there's a lot of card. There's a lot of this card. Holy crap. This is another match that didn't do anything for me. I can't remember where I read this, but they put a chairs match with two of the very best workers that WWE has ever seen, Randy Orton and Rey Mysterio. And a chairs match always slows down good workers. So it was okay, I guess. I mean, Rey Mysterio won on what, a roll-up, basically, on a little schoolboy. And underdog babyface beats big bad monster heel. That's exactly how that's going to happen. There's no issue with that, I don't think. But otherwise, I again, this is another match. I just don't have a lot. I didn't get enough from it.
I thought the pacing was really, really strange in this match. I thought it was quite odd. Mysterio going over was not my pick.
No, me
either. It was not my pick.
I don't like
because
it.
I don't. And it's not because I don't like Rey Mysterio. Right. I mean, if you don't like Rey Mysterio, you probably don't like puppies.
Or pro wrestling in general.
Or pro wrestling puppies. Oh, I think we may have a promotion idea here. Could you imagine that?
Pro wrestling puppies. Yeah, puppies? I've got two dogs in the backyard that were trying to make their appearance on this show tonight. I want to be pro wrestling puppies.
They're ready for a run-in. It was a strange decision because I find there's much more upside to an evil, conniving, strong Randy Orton than there is to Rey Mysterio going over.
Absolutely.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, no, just with Rey Mysterio, like, fuck it, whatever. Like, there's another guy that if you want him to be in the main event, just put him in the main event and nobody will blink an eye at it or bat an eye at it. Randy Orton, however, being this big monster to take over SmackDown Live and just potentially end people's careers, as you can end careers in WWE, is good. We did get a good boogie board spot out of this match that Darren pointed out.
That was a fantastic spot, mm-hmm. let's be honest. And then the seated senton that Ray missed, and mm-hmm. his pelvis landed on chairs.
Mm-hmm.
That must not have felt good.
No.
But this is Randy Orton. Since he came back and went for Jeff Hardy's ear, it reestablished him as someone interesting, because let's not forget the whole situation with the Wyatts turned him super dull.
Mm-hmm.
It was very, very boring. My. And his face turn afterward was even worse because Jinder Mahal, Randy Orton, let's not forget all of that. But since he's come back, he's done Jeff Hardy beats him at Hell in a Cell. Then he's like, okay, it's time to move on to my other victim. I'm going to take out one of your heroes. Then Ty Dillinger comes in the way, mm-hmm. and he's like, I don't know who you are, but I'm going to kill you anyway. And he takes him out, injures his hand, right? Kayfabe, mm-hmm. Dillinger needed. But still, you know, it's like,
right.
I don't know who you are, but I'm going to push you out of the way nonetheless. So I'm like, he's got to do the same thing to Mysterio here, right?
Right, right.
He's got to do something egregious to Rey Mysterio. But we didn't get that.
Kristen points out that there's a lot of swearing in this podcast. And she seems to be a little upset that you can't read the chat because she wants to talk shit to you.
Oh, I can read the chat. I'm just ignoring her.
This is what she suspects every Monday when we're trying to troll you. So I've got audio proof now. It's going to be out on iTunes, Spotify, anywhere you get your podcast. Yeah, whatever. That was, I guess, a fine match. I don't know. I've got nothing. Moving on, we have the Raw's Women's Championship match, Ronda Rousey versus Nia Jax, in a much better match than anticipated.
Well, I mean, I really liked their match that they had. What was it? Was that Money in the Bank?
I can't remember, but you're right. Their last match together was quite good.
It was surprisingly good. And it's crazy. And Sean Ross Sapp over at Fightful, he pointed out in a tweet that it's crazy that Nia Jax in the ring has the most chemistry mm-hmm. with someone who only started wrestling last March.
Right, right. And she has no chemistry with anyone else.
No, she doesn't.
None at all. But she can wrestle with this other woman who has not a lot of chemistry with anyone else. It's the weirdest thing.
It blows my mind. It really, really does blow my mind.
Yeah, yeah. But Darren points out that the kissing of the face breaker was a nice touch. The kissing, that was nice as she breaks the arm. And it was a good match. There's not a lot to talk about the match, but it was a good match.
I want to point out, like Darren said, the kissing of her fist mm-hmm. and her maneuvering and positioning herself to keep Tamina in her eyesight. Right. You know, it's like, you're there, here, mwah. And she goes for the armbar, and Tamina's like, well, shit, I can't do anything. I can't sneak up on her. She's going to release the hold or whatever. You know, it's like, her ring psychology tonight was on point. She carried Nia Jax. Let's say that again. Let's let that sink mm-hmm. in.
Mm-hmm.
Ronda Rousey carried Nia Jax
right.
to a great match tonight. And that's, again, it just boggles the imagination.
There's a lot of things about Ronda Rousey that you can dislike a little bit. But what I think is really nice tonight, like the kissing of the facebreaker, she's learning how to add these little nuances that make a wrestling match and not a rehearsed MMA match, which I think,
right.
I think it's taken her some time to realize that. I absolutely think that she has learned that there's a little more character in there. Even when she came out later in the show, which we'll get to, I thought she delivered that spot much better than she could have at Royal Rumble, much better. She's improved absolutely. Leaps and bounds.
And I mean, she does shit that she hasn't been doing over the past, right. Since she started. Mm-hmm. I mean, the step up fist that yeah. she did, which will be reused ad nauseum in WWE packages for Ronda Rousey for the next 18 years. It was fantastic. We haven't seen her do that before. So she's adding stuff. She's trying things. And isn't that what we want from our pro wrestlers? Like, to not be stale and always have the same five moves of doom, you know, kind of thing.
Right. No,
this she's like, she's committed to it. Like you said, there's things that you can point out and say, well, this isn't quite as successful, but goddamn, when she can go in the ring, when she can hit the ring like she did tonight and pull out some new stuff like that, and you're like, whoa! I mean, that's part of it.
No, 100%. And we have people in the chat talking about the, and I agree with this, one of the bummers about this is you built Nia back up to be a monster heel after she broke Becky's face, to now she got her arm broken and then Becky beat her up, and now monster heel is what are they doing with Nia? They build her up over, this happens over and over and over again. Every time they need to build a big baby face, we've got this Nia Jax, looks like the convincing heel. She kind of gets over for a little bit, then nobody gives a fuck anymore, and then she loses and she looks weak. And I guess we'll wait till the next cycle and she'll never amount to anything as far as a heel, because she really doesn't. You know she's going to lose feuds. You know she's not winning them. She never does.
She's the new Big Show.
She is the new Big Show. Absolutely.
But the difference between Big Show and Nia Jax is that Big Show at least had the charisma and he had the depth of personality to be able to pull off.
Right.
A face or a heel character.
Right.
Had the unfortunate Becky Lynch incident happened to another wrestler who isn't so wooden in her delivery, in her promos, who would have understood how to sustain her heat beyond just,
hey, look at this. Remember this, guys?
God, it's such a bad angle.
I mean, it's normal that the facebreaker stuff has fizzled out because it's been allowed to fizzle out. And I'm not putting this all on Nia. I think WWE Creative could have done more to help her out. But Nia, in and about herself, does not have the naturals to have pulled off this angle successfully and perhaps become the top heel that WWE would have wanted her to be in this circumstance.
Sure. And Kristen actually pointed out now that, and I actually agree with it, that's why I'm reading this comment. But she says that maybe they don't actually care about Nia and they don't want to push her, but they just saw an opportunity with Becky and they could use her for this. And I mean, 100%, that's probably what happened. But regardless, you don't really have any believable heels in the Raw Women's Division. Like, I don't give a shit about that division because it's Ronda and a bunch of people that will never beat Ronda. Ruby Riott's not believable. Natalya, who even knows what they do with Natty anymore?
The Raw Women's Division is face heavy right now.
It is.
Because you have Sasha and Bayley on top of that, you know, and Ronda. And then after that, well, there's Alexa, but Alexa hasn't been, you know, she's injured, hasn't been wrestling.
To be a GM. Rumored to, who knows if that'll happen, but.
But still, maybe not not your top tip-top worker either. I'm not saying that she's terrible, but and Ruby could be, but she's not there yet. Then after that, you have Alicia Fox, you have Mickie James. Mickie James was fantastic, but they're just not pushing her the right way.
No.
Dana Brooke, who is heel or face whenever, depending on the week. It's really weird. It's a very, the Raw Women's Division is interesting as far as their talent that they have, because they do have Sasha, Bayley, Ronda, Ember Moon.
Yes. Yeah.
But as far as the division being competitive, it's much more interesting on the SmackDown side.
Yeah, Jay King in the chat said at this point, Ronda's bigger than the title. That's so true. And Zachary79 said it's time for Ember to get her turn at a title since Asuka just did. And I think that's true, but the problem is we know what's happening, right? Like, you and I could tell you this, and I wouldn't be surprised if this is exactly what you thought. Becky will win the Rumble. Becky will get her shot at WrestleMania. Ronda will be a heel, And that is when we'll finally see the reign of terror from Rhonda with the title end. And we're just going to have to deal with her having that title for almost a whole year. And that's fine. I don't mind long title reigns. At least she's there every week. But it's very forecast. And it's what we deserve. And it'll be the main event of WrestleMania. But we're not going to see these other women used for a little bit.
I agree. And here's, I'll even, if we're talking about this now, I was saving it for later. But since we're talking about it now, the Ronda Rousey heel turn is inevitable,
right?
Because all the signs are there. They have been brewing in NXT for the UFC Four Horsewomen to arrive and finally have that feud with the WWE Horsewomen. That's something that people have been talking about for 18 months now,
right?
I think,
right?
And everything is in place for that to happen. Mm-hmm. Now, if we construe that what Rhonda did tonight was a heel move, which I think it is.
I do too. Yeah.
I think these are shots fired, because who did she push off the ladder? She didn't push off Charlotte.
No.
She pushed off Charlotte and Becky.
Right.
To half of the four horsewomen. Mm-hmm. Who are the two remaining horsewomen? Sasha and Bayley. Where are they? They're on Raw.
Right.
Now, this will all depend on what they do within the upcoming months with Shayna Baszler and her crew, because now she's surrounded by Jessamyn Duke and Maryse Shafir. They're an official trio now.
Yep.
In NXT. I wouldn't be surprised that from out of nowhere, maybe wait until Takeover Phoenix is done, maybe even Royal Rumble weekend, to see Shayna to see the remaining four horsewomen of UFC pop up to help Ronda in some kind of situation, and then you get the war. So right. From that point on, do we get Becky and Ronda as the main event, or does the main event become more around or is it even a main event? Is it a match that an eight woman tag team match for horsewomen versus four horsewomen? Because the four horsewomen of UFC have to be heels,
right? No, absolutely.
The There's WWE no women face. Will not be babyfaces.
No, Shayna Baszler, no fucking way can she ever be a babyface. No way.
Not anymore.
It would never ever work. Before we move on to the next match here, I'm more excited to talk about than two of the next three. I'm excited about. So we do have people in here saying, mostly JPQ, saying that he does not think that the Four Horsemen versus Four Horsewoman match will happen until, or the build even will happen until the night after Mania. And I 100% agree with him. He says, and he also says, too soon, Warren, he's going to bet you your favorite bottle of maple syrup.
It happens
the night after Mania.
That's offensive.
Maple syrup's delicious. I wish that was my bet.
Well, why do I necessarily have a favorite? Do you have a favorite bottle of maple syrup? What the hell does that mean? Is it because I'm Canadian?
I think so. Mrs. Buttersworth, if you'd like to send that to me, slide in the DMs. I'll give you an address. Moving on to the next match. It's a WWE Championship match. Daniel Bryan versus AJ Styles. And I want to start off with this match by saying that on Friday night, I was very excited for what ended up being a similar style match, which was Zack Sabre Jr. versus Jonathan Gresham. And Final Battle, and it was fucking awesome. I'm a big fan now. I wasn't at the beginning of 2018 of these technical matches, but a huge match on them where, we talked about this a lot in the Discord. One little mistake can make you lose. And so that's what this match was. Daniel Bryan, I did not get to live in a time where I was watching wrestling live. I just wasn't into wrestling at the time when Daniel Bryan was heel in WWE. And I was not around, watching Bryan Danielson in Ring of Honor. I didn't know that was a thing. So I didn't get to see what heel Daniel Bryan is, but damn it, he's so good at it. He's fantastic. He's ruthless. This was two guys that are really at the top of their game, even in their age. I guess Daniel Bryan's not too old, but AJ Styles is definitely 41. He's definitely older. So
he's 42, I think.
He's 42, yeah. So it's great. And Jay King in the chat says Brian's moveset is my favorite right now, and that's what I'm getting at. He had him in the Tree of Woe, pulls on his neck. The kicks are brutal. The chops are brutal. He says, you want to chop me, and just chops the shit out of him. He rolls out of the ring. Everything's crafty. And this started with the Brock Lesnar match. And now we've got Daniel Bryan looking like a dominant motherfucker right now. And it is fantastic because he is just so good. He's just so good.
I love the sequence when Daniel Bryan was setting AJ up for Hurricane Rana off the top rope. And Styles reversed it into a roll up. Mm-hmm. Then Bryan kicks out, but then Styles goes for the Styles Clash, and Bryan then on Bryan, and then AJ rolls it into a half crab.
Yeah,
and he's holding onto the half crab. Then Bryan powers out of it and gets the yes lock in. That whole sequence there, it gave me the shivers. It was so good. And they're back to calling the yes lock the LaBelle
yes,
lock.
And that sounds so much more brutal than the yes lock.
But here's the thing. I don't know if you noticed this. I talked about this on my, I think it was on my, I talked about this week. Oh, it was on my TLC prediction show, which you can find at youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes. I was discussing how his finishers have changed mm-hmm. now that he's a heel, right?
Right.
His match that he had with Mustafa Ali this week, he put him on in the yes lock. Daniel Bryan, him pronouns dude, he put the yes lock on Mustafa Ali, and Mustafa Ali was in it for a good solid minute. It was during the commercial, right? And he had him in there for a good minute. That's the yes lock, right? Right. This is like Daniel Bryan's big move, and Mustafa Ali is hanging on. Okay, so the yes lock isn't quite as effective, but the heel hook, he taps like that.
Yeah.
So the yes movement is dead, so mm-hmm. the yes lock is ineffective, but the heel hook just ends the match like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know Daniel Bryan thinks about that shit.
Absolutely. Yeah, we saw him in, if you watched even a little bit of Totes Deves, we saw him talking about how if he ever got to come back to wrestle, he would change his moveset to be more safe. And if he got to have his dream match with Brock Lesnar, he'd use some weird bear's, a crazy vegan bastard. All these things he says. But yeah, the combos were good. And what was so nice about this match was we didn't see this dream match just destroyed by finisher Palooza at the end, where it's like, oh, Styles Clash 2.95 kick, or yeah. You know, the flying knee strike and all this other stuff. No, it was just good, solid technical wrestling where Daniel Bryan ended up just reversing the small package, reversing the leverage, and winning. And AJ Styles looked dumbfounded because he got outsmarted.
And I loved that finish because it just shows that you have two world-class competitors mm-hmm. who are essentially each other's equals, and it's just a question of who fucks up first.
Right.
Exactly like you said at first, it's who right. makes the mistake, mm-hmm. and tonight it was on AJ.
It helps to me, and this is a big reason why typically I got to plug this at least once an episode, regardless of what promotion I'm talking about. I'm more of an indie wrestler guy. I'm way more into that. And so I watched Ring of Honor and the other day, and that was the same way. Zack Sabre Jr. ended up getting the upper hand on Jonathan Gresham and leaning back and doing one of his fancy pins as he does. And just because he just outsmarted him. And mm-hmm. those two matches stick out to me more than any other match I watched this weekend because it's just smart. And it makes it feel more real.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we watch this product, this wrestling, this form of entertainment, because we, a little bit of us, want to escape and believe that this shit is real in our minds for a moment. Mm-hmm. And when it's a technical display like that, it is legitimately real, even if the finish is you know, predetermined. But it's amazing. Yeah, I really enjoyed that. My second
match of the night?
Match. No.
Yeah. Okay.
No, certainly not match of the night. yeah, I feel like there's someone in this chat that'll start bitching at me about that if I say this is my favorite match of the night, and that person would be correct. Moving on to the worst match of the night, in my opinion. The IC Championship match, Seth Rollins versus Dean Ambrose in an absolute fucking snorefest. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing to talk about with the match itself. Like, technically, it was sound. It was clean, but it was a blood feud.
No, see, that's the thing. It wasn't a blood feud. That was the problem.
Right.
That's the problem. Like, there was nothing egregiously bad with this match. There was nothing wrong with the match, aside that it had no heat. It just had no heat.
None.
And I've said this a couple of times recently. WWE has an extraordinary capacity to mess up sure things.
Right.
Like built-in feuds. Mm-hmm. Miz and Daniel Bryan never lived up to what it could have been.
No.
Sasha versus Bayley. It's pre-baked. It's ready. It's at the tips of their fingers. Why aren't they pulling the trigger on it? Mm-hmm. And now we have it again with Dean and Seth.
Right.
The hype packages wanted us to believe that this was a blood feud, that Dean did this awful thing, which it was.
Right.
Then, you know, like storyline wise.
Sure.
Then the night where your bro announces that he has cancer and has to leave for treatment and he hopes he comes back one day, that you decide on that night to screw on that friendship, that legacy, whatever you guys are building together. Yeah, yeah, it's a horrible heel thing to do. Mm-hmm. But I'm not putting any blame on Dean and Seth here. I'm squaring it all on creative.
Right.
Who at some point decided to make the feud about Dean rejecting the audience, because that's all his promos were about.
They're all you peoples. And you're the one that complained about it the most, the you people. But his problem was with Seth. That's so uneven.
And then going to the doctors to get inoculated, dropping his pants. You know that's a Vince McMahon segment.
Yeah, gotcha.
You know that's a segment where Vince was like, ha ha ha! Pal, that's fantastic! He got a vaccine up the ass! Ah!
Yeah.
For sure that's what happened.
Right.
So we just lost focus that it's these two guys that hate each other because one feels betrayed and the other one just lost his mind. And you saw it in that chronicle that they did of Dean. Mm-hmm. It was a very personal and introspective thing.
Right.
So the minute that it started becoming Dean, oh, you people stink. I have to put these gas masks on because I'd want to get your diseases. It's like, what are we doing? Mm-hmm. Just let these guys go at each other. That the night where they did the cat and mouse thing in the arena, I was like, this is so fucking stupid.
Right. Right there. Like, this is where we hung out and where we were smoking cigarettes in the boys' room and drinking malt liquor from dad's closet as we were the Shield and we did bad things. Oh boy. Oh boy. It's so fucking PG-13. Like, it's not even PG-13. It's like, if the Looney Tunes were wrestlers in the Shield, that's what that bullshit was. Like, just the weirdest, I didn't hate the build the whole way. Right. Like, some of the build was fine. It's WWE. They know they can pop a crowd or turn a crowd based on talking shit about said crowd and talk shit about said crowd's favorite sports team and related sports season depending on what time of the year it is. So, you know, if you're in Houston, talk shit about the Houston Texans and talk shit about the Houston Rocket, whatever. And that's why they did, you know, there's a lot of factories there and do the fog gap, whatever. That's fine. The issue isn't even just the build itself, but Seth and Dean just had Starcade? They just had a fucking cage match.
Yeah.
So why is the pay-per-view match a regular wrestling match on a gimmick pay-per-view with the feud that should have it? And then you have, like, let's think about when Dean came back from injury. Like, how bad did we forgot about Dean? You did. He was gone for so long. And he came back and we're excited. He's jacked. He looks mean. We're like, this motherfucker's turning heel on Seth and it's gonna be the feud of the year.
And he wasn't cutting any promos. Remember at first, he wasn't saying a word. He was stonewalling anyone who was talking to him.
Yeah.
It was fucking amazing.
Right. Right. That's what we needed. Because he looked like the most lunatic friend Dean Ambrose has ever looked was when he came back, wouldn't talk, would show up and just get pissed off and stare at Seth Rollins and then give him a dirty deeds and give him another dirty deeds and give him another dirty deeds. Turn on him after they win the tag champs. Give him a dirty deeds on there. Don't give a fuck about the fact that Roman went out that night. That makes you look like a lunatic. Not coming out cosplayed as Bane in some pretty dope jackets. The boy's got some style.
Yeah, you know, I don't know how much input Renee has, because Renee, she looks fine all the time. You know, mm-hmm. she's got fantastic fashion sense. So maybe, you know, she eggs him on a little.
Sure.
But the jackets are impeccable.
The great best jacket of the night. And then, you know, he's a heel because he has a gold chain. Because nothing says I'm a bad guy like look at my cheap jewelry on my neck. I don't know if I'm the only person that notices these things, but I saw that chain. And I was like, what the fuck?
You're right. I think even Bobby Lashley has one, come to think of it.
Wow.
Huh. I think so.
Wow. Did the Usos wear chains when they were heels?
Oh, probably.
Yeah, but their gimmick is like they run a penitentiary or whatever. Kristen says it's called Wardrobe. It's a billion-dollar company. Hmm? I read that comment, realizing now that I have nothing to say to it. So, anyway, this was a wasted match on the card.
Just like this was a wasted comment in the chat. Thank you, Kristen.
There we go. Segways. Wasted match on the card. Big bummer. You know we're getting a rematch, and I guess we're getting a rematch.
Are we, though? Are we?
I mean, I would think so. My biggest issue with the match, more than anything else, though, Warren, is the fact that we got a Dirty Deeds at the end. And everybody that watches WWE knows that if Dean hits the Dirty Deeds in the middle of the ring, no one is kicking out ever, because it's the most protected finisher in the WWE. It just is. It just is. I can't. The only person that's ever happened was when he wrestled against Triple H, and Triple H's leg was under the ropes.
Right.
It's always a leg under the ropes. So, but my issue is that it was a solid like 3 to 5 seconds before he tagged him.
Yes. When he finally rolled on top of him for the pin, you mean?
Yeah. It was a while.
Yeah.
It was, and I don't like that, because it's like Seth had this great run. He's been holding his own. So it was really like an 8 count.
Yeah. Let's look at the positives mm-hmm. from this.
Okay.
Because I think this is very telling for the future. You know, there'll probably be a rematch, because every goddamn WWE title has to have a goddamn rematch clause, every automatic time. Rematch clause. So yeah, you're right. This is probably happening, but I think this is a sign that we're heading into WrestleMania mm-hmm. with Seth Rollins being the guy.
Right.
Guy who's going to topple Brock.
Right.
I really do.
No, I do too. I'm with you there.
I mean, if there's anyone who had any doubts as to whether or not the company has faith in this guy, that the company wonders, can Seth Rollins carry a show? Mm-hmm. They bookended last Raw with Seth. Seth mm-hmm. coming out to do his promo. Seth pulling out a great match
right
in the main event.
Oh, that was a great match. You're right. Yeah, it was a very great match.
So they know what they have in them, mm-hmm. and I think they're ready to put him back into a main event situation. Mm-hmm. And why not? I think he's more than deserving. He's been carrying the load of that company of Raw for the past year.
He has, absolutely. And so we're going to get to see the culmination of this hard work. I'm with you 100% that Seth is the go-to guy. Seth has been kind of the guy for a while, though, because, you know, I watch other sports. I watch ESPN and these other things. Seth Rollins is on ESPN as a guest host on a lot of shows a lot of times.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, from a marketing standpoint, he's been representing the company as it is. So it'll be nice for the casual fans that don't care about those things, as you know, a nerd that does a wrestling podcast does. You know, that's something that's completely different. So it'll be nice to see Seth do that. I do think that I think we see him win the Royal Rumble. I think we see him face Brock. I think he and Brock will have a fucking stellar match. And I do think that he'll be our champion for a while. And I think that everyone will be very content with it, because his last title run was real good.
Yep, it was.
As a heel, but finally, you know, it took Seth a long time to get over as a babyface with me. But nice. It's nice, yeah.
But I like his babyface. Like, he's scrappy, you know. He's not a Daniel Bryan type babyface.
Right.
He's not above cutting corners to win, nonetheless, you know. And I appreciate that about Seth Rollins. There's still something very true to that heel persona that we knew him under.
Well, we got to get on to the main event, and main event that, well, damn it, it just happened to live up to the hype. SmackDown Women's Championship TLC match, first TLC match ever. which at this point they don't need to say that anymore because it feels weird to think about a time when women didn't get to have great matches with weapons. Becky Lynch as champion versus Charlotte versus Asuka, and goddamn, that match was good.
All I can, I think what I want to preface this by saying is that, you know, I hope everyone who say women's matches are piss breaks, I hope you really had the best fucking piss break of your life tonight. I hope you urinated in ways that you never thought was humanly possible and that it generated sweats of joy for you because you missed out on something remarkable.
Yeah, it was brutal. It was special. It was just absolutely special. I'm going to be just honest here in my opinion. Asuka and Charlotte have two of the best kendo strikes in all of wrestling right now.
God damn it.
And, you know, I've been watching a lot of random ass wrestling, and Charlotte can swing that thing, man.
But it was even on Tuesday, mm-hmm. on SmackDown, they were laying into each other. And I was like, okay, this Sunday is going to be real brutal. Because they were laying into each other something fierce, and it was the same thing tonight, all of them. Yeah. It was ridiculous. It was really, really ridiculous.
Yeah, no, it was, and there was a lot of really nice stuff here. I'm big on, and I meant to mention this during the Drew match, I'm big on wrestlers that talk while they're wrestling, like talking for the crowd to hear it, right? Mm-hmm. So we heard Charlotte at one point while she's setting up Becky for a table spot, say that the man always bows down to a queen, or men always bow down to a queen. That shit is awesome. Like that's something that makes a match. Like, yeah, this match had a lot of great action, but a match is a match. We forget about the match, but you won't forget about a moment like that, right? Because if you circle this moment and you bring it back to the next time Becky and Charlotte feud, that's some special character work and some special, like, those two women just have chemistry that unbelievable.
Well, I mean, they are legit best friends, right? You know, I think there's a lot of confidence there. And you're right, you know, there's a difference between just screaming and talking, mm-hmm. you know, in the ring. Because when you talk, you bring something. Even Asuka.
Right.
Even Asuka, you know, after that moment where, you know, where Becky hit the Bexploder on Charlotte into the barricade, and then Asuka just came after both of them with kendo sticks. Mm-hmm. And then she was walking away and she lifted the kendo stick and she started yelling something in Japanese. It was just like, you know, it's the conqueror, you know, it's like the you know, who came across the plains from a strange and distant land, and she's just destroying everyone with her battle cry. I have no idea what she's saying. Then all of a sudden, Charlotte just spears her through the barricade and everything was so perfect.
Yeah, it was really well timed. And typically, I'm a little tough on Charlotte matches because Charlotte is a little botchy at times. She can be a little rough. But since she's adopted this thing at Evolution, when she snapped and went heel, which is one of my favorite moments of 2018, was her turning heel. Absolutely one of my favorite things. But since she's gone onto this like wild persona, she's actually gotten a lot cleaner in the ring with her opponents, which I think is something. I don't know if it's weird or makes sense or what it is, but I just feel like her matches are always quality, but the quality is even better than it was before.
Well, you know, commentary over the past couple of weeks has been pointing out, you know, talking a lot about her power game, putting over her power game.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that speaks volumes to your point, is she's not relying as much on the flashy stuff.
Right.
Her moonsaults, which are...
I don't like her moonsaults at all.
Now she's going in for more power-based offense, using her strength, using her height. I mean, she is a tall lady.
She is.
You know, she's taller than Asuka, taller than Becky. And, you know, she might not be like massive giant. You know, she's not Nia Jax levels of tall. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, she comes across as much more dominant physically than the others. Right. And I think she's playing off of that a lot more, mm-hmm. more than doing more Sasha Banks style of wrestling, you know?
You mean trying to break your neck?
I mean trying to break your neck. Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Speaking of breaking your neck, JP Hughes says that she Kota Ibushi snaps. So.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Oh,
you like
that's
you like that segue comparison. There?
Yeah, I like that. Oh, nice. The segue. Look, I'm tearing up right now.
Good, good. I've been working on segues all semester in my college classes on my 12-year degree journey. That's a different podcast, not a wrestling one. This match was fantastic. We did have at the end of the match, as we kind of talked about a little bit earlier, Ronda comes out, pushes the ladder. I did think it was interesting she didn't help Asuka get the title because she didn't give a fuck who was champion. She just didn't want those two women to win, which was nice. I thought that was a really nice touch. She ends up climbing up. Asuka, after a terribly booked 2018, will end 2018 as the SmackDown Women's Champion, where the Empress of Tomorrow deserves to be.
1 year after her debut.
Is it exactly 1 year after her debut?
Well, maybe not exactly, but it's on this pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. It's on TLC that she had debuted, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was. Right. Yeah, because she squashed somebody.
But I'd have to check. Because it's not exactly 1 year ago because TLC wasn't in December last year.
Right. You know, the nice thing about this is, and we don't get this a lot as WWE fans, one, because there's just a lot of programming and it's difficult to give the payoffs that we want to see every single time. And that's that, you know, there's something to be said about that, good or bad. But with Asuka and the time that you have invested in her, the time that you had, like, we all wanted Asuka to be on top. Asuka has really, you know, we're both on Twitter all the time. Asuka's one of the few people that you know, usually wrestling Twitter doesn't turn on.
Yeah.
They've been pretty high on her consistently because we've been sitting here for a whole year and...
Kind of like Becky Lynch, actually.
Yeah. Oh, well, Becky Lynch was way worse for us Becky Lynch fans. I've always been a big lucky Becky Lynch fan since I started watching wrestling again. And damn, it was hard. It was hard to watch Becky Lynch lose over and over again for a while. It just like, it just tears at you where you're really invested in. I got to get other hobbies. Anyway, but for such a long time, we wanted Asuka to be on top. And now we actually had like this really monumental moment where she won in a big match against two women that will end up being Hall of Famers in WWE's Hall of Fame and are completely changing the game for women's wrestling right now on a mainstream way of looking. Not overall, because you know if you watch independent wrestling, you know that what happened tonight is nothing unique to what happens in the indies. But for a mainstream audience, millions of people to see women's wrestling on this level was an absolute fucking treat.
And I think it's, you know, just pointing out the fact that, you know, the women main evented the pay-per-view. You sure? Okay, they went down the historical first time TLC match. Okay.
Right.
But you know, just very, very casually, no one really came out and mentioned, main event, and we have the women in the main event. It's just like, nope, this is just like a thing that's happening.
Right.
And to me, that is a real step forward in the evolution where you can put the women up on in the main event and not make a big deal out of it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, they don't have just to do like, that anymore.
And this makes sense. And honestly, let's be frank. Well, let's be Anthony and Warren, but let's be honest. who else would you have really put in a main event position tonight? There is nothing more compelling right now in WWE than the SmackDown Women's Division. Charlotte, Becky, and now Asuka.
Yeah.
They're just keeping they're maintaining top levels of interest.
Right, absolutely, and. We got people in the chat talking about who is Asuka going to face at Mania, and JPQ's guessing Charlotte, and I do think that's why they are now at a stalemate one-to-one, so that's nice. I think that we'll see at WrestleMania Asuka get her comeuppance, as the theme of this evening was, get her comeuppance for having her streak broken, and the match will be fucking brilliant is what it will be. It'll be fantastic and probably the best match on the show, just like their match at WrestleMania was, in my opinion.
It'll probably be better.
You think it'll be better than the first one?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I especially just like we said, since Charlotte is transitioning into like a more grounded moveset, something that maybe she feels a little more comfortable with, I think it's going to be even more fantastic. Can you imagine the two of them deciding to strike at each other?
Yeah.
It'll be fantastic.
Yeah, it'll be absolutely fantastic. I'm really, I didn't think TLC was that great. And you guys that are in the chat, Let us know what you think about the show. You give us a letter grade. We don't do star ratings here. I'm not Dave Meltzer. Don't name any wrestling moves after me if you're a tag team, unless you want to. Then that'd be something. Anyway, let me know, letter grade, what you think about the show. Warren, letter grade, final thoughts. What do you think?
I'd give this a C+.
I'm low on it too, man. I'm not that low.
I'd give it a C+. I think it was a super uneven card. I think there were the good matches were great, mm-hmm. but I think there was enough slow paced matches and matches without heat that really dragged it down. Mm-hmm. It's really when we started getting up into the upper card, when we got to Ronda and Nia, Bryan and Styles and the triple threat at the end. That's where the pay-per-view really started to shine. Otherwise, it was a proper buildup, but I felt we could have used a really great match, something to just spark, just give a little ignition, which I felt was the problem with the a good two-thirds of the pay-per-view.
You know, we got a few ratings in here, and they're kind of all over the place. I've decided that I'm going to start grading these shows on a curve because they're so fucking long. And so I think that you need to, like, look at the fact that when you're going to give people a 5-hour pay-per-view, it is probably not going to be an A show because they're doing what we want. Like, there's no winning with us wrestling fans, right? We either bitch because nobody's on the card or we bitch because the card's too long. I'll take the card being too long. I will. I really will. So I'm going to give it a B. I'm going to agree with JPQ. I'm going to give it a B. I think that final battle from Friday was a little bit better, but not really. Overall, like, what I watched in wrestling this weekend actually was not up to the what I was expecting, which is disappointing.
Not even the New Japan show?
I just watched that match. I just watched the tag match, and I've watched it three times now. So, not a WWE related. Go watch Tanahashi and Will Ospreay versus the Golden Lovers, because my God, that match was great.
If you've been on Twitter, you've all seen that GIF.
Yeah.
But in context, it is so much better.
Yeah, absolutely. Warren, let me get some plugs out of the way here. I'll let you plug a little bit, then we'll get out of here. All you guys that joined in the chat, thank you so much. If you are a fan of the Smart to Death podcast, let me let you know what is going on with us later this week. And if you're listening, then you probably are, if you've made it 90 minutes in with myself and a guest host. So we have coming up on Wednesday our year end, and the stream will be on twitch.tv/smarttodeath, just like all of our shows. And Kyle and I should be wearing Jeff Hardy face paint and Santa hats because we lost a bet at WrestleMania or SummerSlam, or we owe somebody a bet. And so that's what we'll be doing. So our three rounds this week will be pay-per-views of the year, matches of the year, wrestlers of the year. And if you've listened to our show for a long time, you know that mine is mostly going to be New Japan.
Kenny Omega.
He's in a lot of them. Spoiler alert, he's in a lot of them. I still have that graphic you made of me looking out at Kenny Omega. It's one of my favorite things I have gotten in 2018. But if you like the Smart to Death show, please go to iTunes, wherever you listen to podcasts. Give us a 5-star Frog Splash rating and review so it can be number one in your ears, hearts, and on the charts. Also, go to prowrestlingtees.com/smarttodeath. Pick up a shirt. Follow us on twitch.tv/smarttodeath. And you can go to shop.spreadshirt.com/smarttodeath. Redbubble.shop. I don't know that one. Moving on. Go to patreon.com/smarttodeath. We have several patrons I need to give a shout out to real quick, and then I'll let Warren get his stuff in here. Brandon McKinney, Natalie Evans, Papa Suter, Robert Jackson, Shane Richardson, Dan White, 720 Wrestling, Warren Hayes, Kevin Cito, Two Girls on a Bench, Ben Seidel, David Edge, Kelly Parker, Cameron Curry, Richard Sandoval, JPQ, Jonathan Pilquist, Courtney Summers, Wilfred Rochus, and we just recently picked up someone else, Carl Hayes, and the Omega Luke podcast. So, thank you so much. No ads on this episode. The Blue Chew ad will be back on Wednesday. Don't you worry, Metal 2006.
Warren, don't you worry.
Don't you worry. Warren, what do you have going on over the next week, buddy, and where can we follow you?
Follow me on YouTube. YouTube.com/MrWarrenHayes. I've got all sorts of stuff. Like I said, I do reviews, recaps every Monday and Tuesday night after Raw, after SmackDown. And if you just pop in there, you can take a look. Think about a subscription. You know, when you do the YouTube thing, at first you're like, subscriptions, whatever, as long as people watch the videos. But YouTube is a really weird place. And the subscriptions really do help a lot when you're a content creator on that platform. So if you're so inclined, if you feel like it, and you know, if you're, even if it's like, you know, this guy, you know, I like his green shirt, maybe I'll, you know, see if he has any other t-shirts. Well, then, you know, do the subscription thing, and then you see what pops up in your feed eventually. And like Anthony said, tomorrow evening, we're going to be doing the, co-hosting, helping out our good friend, Kristen Ashley, editor-in-chief of Diva Dirt, to hand out the Diva Dirt 2018 awards. I think they're fan awards, if I'm not mistaken. Fan award.
Did she tell us there were like over 7,000 votes on that?
Over 7,000.
That's crazy.
That's a lot of people. So you want to be around there. We're going to be doing that live before Raw tomorrow.
Right. For 6 p.m. U.S. Central Standard Time, 7 p.m. Eastern from the Smart to Death Periscope. So if you follow us on Smart to Death, you'll see the video.
There you go. So and you can follow me on Twitter, as it's written right up here, at Mr. Warren Hayes. That's where you can find out everything that's going on. But I got to say, this was a lot of fun to come on to come on the show. And I'm really, really honored that you invited me, Anthony, because I've been a patron even before we started chit-chatting.
Oh, no, I lost your video. Oh, wait, no.
I'm back. Wait. Am I okay?
Stop touching things, Anthony.
I didn't touch anything.
I made it 90 minutes without fucking up. I had to get one in.
Even before we started chatting and doing this, I've been a patron of Smart to Death for a while, because I think both Kyle and Anthony have a fantastic format. These guys don't screw around. It's a lot of fun. They're great to listen to, you know, two buds who like to shoot the shit, and then you know, it's fantastic. And you guys are already watching, you know what I'm talking about, but, for me, it's a sincere pleasure to be here, because I've been a fan of you guys for a while. So thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, man.
Thank you so much, Kyle, for celebrating love this weekend.
Being absent this weekend, right?
Yes.
So pretty much. Yeah, guys. And if you're at the end of this episode, you want to see what this looked like, because Warren does move a lot when he wiggles. I'm going to give him the video so he can upload it to his YouTube channel. And I'll take the audio for this one. So, Warren, thank you so much. You've been down since day one-ish, basically. You've been with us basically since the beginning. So, you've asked me to collab. I rejected. And so, at least I got you on this time. It didn't.
There you go.
Guys, there you go. And Darren wanted me to make sure I tell you guys, I am doing something. We want to add our drinks of the week onto our website, smarttodeath.com. So, if you are so inclined, I will give you a merch item of your choosing. I don't care what the fuck it is. It could be a hoodie. It could be anything. But if you go through all of our episodes and give me the list of all of the drinks and you email it to smarttodeath@gmail.com and you are the first one to do so correctly, which I do have the cheat list. Darren was so polite as to just do it and not take the free merchandise, which is very, very nice of him. So you will get that. And Kristen can tell you that it is a very comfortable hoodie, and it's the good time of the year for hoodies. So anyway, if you want to do that, get all of them. There's like 50 drinks. So make those numbers jump up for us and get you some free merch. That would be awesome. Follow the show at Smart to Death everywhere. Social media. If it's a social media account, if it's a social media platform, it's at Smart to Death. So this is a lot of fun, Warren. Thank you so much for joining me. It was more fun than the show was, than the wrestling event was, I think.
And that's the mark of a great show.
Yeah.
A great podcast.
That's right. Well, guys, thanks for watching. Thanks for listening if you did. For Warren, I'm Anthony. Thanks for joining us. Y'all have a great week.